Welcome to my talk on PLC4X. It's sort of been my pet project for the past year or so. But let me start. Just very flash through this. My name is Christopher Dutz. I'm a senior consultant for a company called Codecentric. Usually we get to work on open source stuff one day per week. But for that project, I convinced my boss that they would free me completely. So I've been paid for the past year to work exclusively on an Apache project. So I was really happy with that. So yeah, so yeah, besides that, I'm sort of involved in the Apache stuff around IoT, especially PLC4X and Apache Edgen, both incubating projects. And very interested in Minute, but due to its C nature, it sort of prevented me from directly being involved. I'm also a member of the Apache Software Foundation, and sort of all my free time goes to open source projects. And to sort of set the stage a little, I'm the son of an electro engineer, so directly after I had my Commodore 64, sort of the next thing I played with was a Siemens S5. And then I had my first Intel system. Yeah, so if you want to hear what's going on, just follow me on Twitter. It's just sort of my name.
When you put on a slide, right in the corner, you continue to talk.
Yeah, okay.
They're seeing you.
Okay. Yeah, so what I'm going to talk about a little is sort of explain the problem that sort of brought us to addressing the topic of communicating with programmable logic controllers. I'll give you a brief introduction to PLC4X, the architecture, how we built up everything, show a little code example, and then I'm going to talk a bit about POCs we did, because we did a lot of proof of concepts for different industries at the moment. I think it's really interesting how PLC4X is performing nicely here. Then I'm going to sort of, as we are at an ApacheCon, you might be interested in how the community around PLC4X is evolving. So I'm going to give a little information on how that's been doing. And in the end, I'll be giving you a short sum up what we're planning in the near future and what's gonna happen. So for another talk, I did a sort of this comparison. I hope you can sort of see what it is. I sort of took the products from the automation industry and the products of, let's say, the IT industry and put them on a timeline. Sort of, you can see these are the Siemens controllers. So you can see they started sometime before in the 1950s. And well, somewhere down here, that's where Apache Hadoop started, Amazon Web Services, stuff like that. So you can see there's quite a difference in how long the different technologies have been available. And what I think is really interesting at the moment, well, at least in Germany, if you're working with the automation industry, well, there is sort of no way around Siemens S7 devices. And well, you can see here, they've sort of around 1994. So it's a product that has sort of been, came to the market almost a decade before Hadoop even evolved. So I think that is the main reason why there's this huge disconnect between the production industry and the IT industry. So the thing is, the automation industry, they started building their systems, and they had been used to, as soon as they need something, they ask for the vendor they decided to go with and sort of just kept on consuming the products their own their suppliers were providing them. So sort of ended in these companies sort of stopping to think outside of the catalog of their supplier. So I've had a lot of talks with people from the industry. And for example, if somebody chose to go down the Siemens path, the only ideas they had were ideas around products Siemens had to offer. But nobody was thinking about everything that's now possible with all the modern IT systems we have. The long cycles in the production industry, as I mentioned, the S7 came hit the market in 94. So from the industry's point of view, all this big data cloud stuff that just evolved yesterday, at least it feels like that for them. They did start to react. So I think 2 years ago, Siemens started with their MindSphere platform. It's sort of a cloud computing platform bundled with integration modules that allows to connect industrial controllers to the cloud, to their cloud platform. You don't get to choose what database you want to use. You don't get to choose what stream processing framework you want to use. You just buy the box, and the box is extremely expensive. So I was contacted by Siemens, that, and they asked me to please reevaluate that, what I'm going to say it right now. But I still haven't found anything that sort of convinced me that you still don't have to pay the $10,000 per year per person to just get access to the SDK. So the situation in the industry at the moment is sort of, if you want to do all this industry 4.0 stuff, so you want to do cloud computing, big data, you'd want to do machine learning, well, the only way you have at the moment is to sort of buy the box, for example, Siemens MindSphere, and then pay $10,000 per developer per year. And well, then you got access to the SDK, and then you have to pay another huge amount of money to actually use the platform. And I thought, come on, it's a huge amount of money to use a product that we have for free, and it's cutting off a lot of companies from this innovation, because you have to think of small companies. They don't have the revenue to sort of just have some 50,000, 100,000K over at the end just to play around with all this cool new Industry 4.0 stuff. So I sort of wanted to change this. That's sort of an idealistic thing for my bosses. I had to show them some numbers. So why should we want to change that? And then I got some numbers. Those are numbers from Germany. It's sort of gross income, German gross income. GDP. Yeah. Ah, okay. Yeah. And it's sort of. Well, the company I work for, we're doing most of our work in the banking and banking insurance, or let's call it marketing and communication. It's sort of, yeah, well, ads, insurance companies, and banks, sort of. And, well, if you have a look at this huge slice of pie, it's more than a quarter, and that's the production industry without buildings. So that's the part that is really interesting for this type of technology.
And the other part is the building.
No, it's just the others. I didn't write down everything, because I just wanted to sort of bring the point that sort of all the big data and machine learning stuff usually takes place in these little pieces of pie. And the one that can really fill you up is actually the production industry. So for us, it's a real good opportunity to sort of start working in that market. Yeah. So for us, the good thing is it's a huge market, and it's not even served yet, because we couldn't really process it yet, because our tools couldn't speak with their tools. And the fun thing is that the needs of that market, well, at least in Germany, I don't know how it is in the US, I would expect that it's sort of similar. The needs of that market exactly matches the haves that we have at the moment. So all of this Industry 4.0 stuff, as I mentioned, big data, machine learning, virtualization, stuff like that, we're good at that. So why don't we start solving the problems of the industry using the tools we already have? So I was just talking about why we should want to change things, but what's the interests of the industry in that? So first of all, a drastic cost reduction. I was totally overwhelmed about the numbers that I was presented sometimes, what these industrial systems cost. There's a pharmacy company, a pharma company where I live, and they told me for collecting data from their internal production, they need to sort of invest 100,000K for licenses for software that is really, really, really crappy. Sort of, you have a time series database that you have to access using some Telnet-like thing. You do a query and you get a CSV file out of it. That's just crappy, and you pay 100,000 bucks for that. Currently, it's really, if you decided to stick with one vendor, you're completely bound to that. You just can't say, oh, well, I'll take the programmable logic controllers from Siemens, and I'll take the SCADA system from a different company. So you don't have that choice. If you decided to go with one vendor, you're usually quite bound to that. And as I mentioned, small and mid-sized companies were completely cut off from the innovation. If you just make, we'll say, 500,000 on revenue, you can't spend most of that for license costs. The solutions currently available in the industry, they just don't scale. One of the proof of concepts I'm going to start in a month or so is where they had the problems that they weren't able to find a server that is big enough to run their systems. Because the industry is sort of fully in the hand of Microsoft, and it's all monoliths running on servers, and failover for them means there's a rack sitting right next to that one, and it's identical, and if that one just goes up in flames, somebody turns a switch, waits till it's rebooted, and then the production continues. But that sort of feels totally 90s for, well, from my point of view. Security is a huge problem. I have on that Mac, I have a Windows 7 virtual machine that I had to disable the updates because otherwise the software I need to program that little device there just wouldn't run. So it's a huge problem. And if I imagine that my SCADA system is built on a system where I know that that a whole big list of security patches aren't installed because otherwise the whole system won't work, that's a huge problem. Let's say the company I'm working for, we've done some work with, for example, Siemens MindSphere. And from my point of view, these solutions aren't nearly as mature as the systems we've been using here. So how could we change this? Please don't use this as a prototype. It was just me sort of whipping up something with tools that were just lying around, sort of how we could sort of build a control system that sort of, well, let's say the manager has a phone where he can sort of see how his a factory is working, and we have a brand new computer where you can sort of also access the status and sort of, yeah, we're doing some fancy Kafka streams, maybe processing, storing that in some big data database, doing some number crunching with Spark, and well, let's say have a Kibana front end and stuff like that. So this is sort of the typical way you would solve such a problem at the moment. But what's wrong with that? Well, you did see that there is this little black box, and that's usually where the details are. That is usually, at the moment, it's usually sort of a, if you can see this, it's sort of a box that's a little smaller than that one, and the typical solution is you stick one of these boxes directly next to that, have a 15 centimeters cable connected to the PLC, and that little other box is just a Windows CE, yes, CE device that connects to the PLC and writes data to a CSV file. And the cool big data system now uses something like Camel to milk that CSV file and to do the rest of the magic I showed you on the previous slide. Oh, damn it. My nice... Ah, yeah, it is. So let's say, in the end, we're building a huge, big system, and it's we're using really, really good software for that. But the integration part is, well, it's not much better than this donkey cart. Well, the donkey is quite cute, but it's just not very performant. So our solution, or we try to solve this problem by replacing the donkey cart with Apache PLC4X. Well, the mission statement, yeah, PLC4X is a set of libraries for communicating with industrial programmable logic controllers using a variety of protocols, but with a shared API. So it's sort of what they did with JDBC in the end 90s. I don't know if who of you did some database developing before JDBC came. Yeah, it was a huge pain in the ass because you sort of had to get some drivers for that particular database. You had to use the API of that driver. And, well, then your boss decided to switch from Oracle to another database. And then you had to throw away your software and rewrite it. We're trying to solve the same problem JDBC did then with PLC4X now. I think I don't have to explain what incubating is. the general idea is you write a piece of software that only has to reference the API module. It's sort of all you need. We also provide a wide variety of integration modules. So you can use PLC4X without using the native API. We already have adapters for Apache Camel, for Apache Agent, and since 2 weeks ago for Apache Kafka Connect. So we've got sort of data sources you can just sort of integrate into your existing landscape. It's called PLC4X because it was never intended to be a PLC4J. So the main problem is understanding the protocols and sort of describing them. Sort of writing a driver from that is sort of just the coding exercise. So it's the main intention of the project to provide also libraries in C, maybe C sharp, well, maybe even JavaScript, TypeScript, whatever you think, because it just depends on our contributors. I'm currently sort of 100% consumed with Java, but I think as soon as we've reached a certain level, I'll definitely help with the other languages. The real functionality, it's implemented in dedicated driver modules, and each of them wraps the communication with one particular protocol. And all you have to do is when you write an application, sort of use the API module, and add the particular driver as a class path dependency, and off you go. Not all PLCs offer the same functionality. And what we're trying to do is sort of, if it's possible, we use what's available directly. And if something isn't directly possible, we try to simulate it. So from the API point of view, you don't have to care about it. But if something's totally not possible, your application shouldn't blow up in your face. For example, a Siemens device, you can read and write a lot of you can read a lot of values in one request. But the funny thing is, you can only write one single value. But it would sort of be bad if we sort of created the API in a way that you can read as many as you want, but you can only write one. So what we're doing is we're just breaking up these large write requests and simulating them by sending individual requests. So from an API point of view, it works just as you expect. Other drivers for Bekoff, for example, the Bekoff ADS protocol, we're able to read and write multiple values. So that works nicely. But there's, for example, also a lot of PLCs offer the ability to execute functions. So you can sort of prepare some functions in the PLCs that you can manually trigger from outside. So that would be a something that doesn't work on all PLCs. So we sort of wrapped each of these domains in Java optionals. So you sort of get a connection. You ask, can I execute things? If yes, then you can do it. If it says no, well, it will blow up if you try to. It's our general goal to make it possible to write software almost totally independent of the actual PLC you're talking to. That makes it really simple to, first of all, write, let's say, derived libraries. So you could start writing machine learning libraries that sort of help address predictive maintenance problems that you can just write because they work on all PLC types. I'm really hoping on seeing something like that. What were the domains I was talking about that we're currently supporting is reading, writing, and a publish-subscribe notification type. So you can tell the PLC, please, if this address, if this value changes, please inform me actively. Just actively read, actively write. What's coming up in the future is going to be this calling of functions and the listing of resources. Some PLCs support sort of give me a directory of all the resources that I could address. For an S7 device, that would sort of not work well, but for other devices, it would. It's an asynchronous thing. You can sort of decide if you want to. You can say, please inform me about this value every 100 milliseconds. Or you can say, please inform me as soon as this value changes. And as third possibility, these devices can send so-called alarms. So if some sort of internal state is reached, they can actively send predefined messages. You could say read is a pull read and subscribe is a push read. The protocols we currently support is the Siemens S7 COM. I added the OX32 because that's sort of the indicator of the protocol. We've got the Beckhoff ADS. Both of them are sort of probably mainly used on the European continent. We recently added Modbus and Ethernet IP. We're currently thinking of adding OPC UA. And what I'm really actively working on is the Emerson Delta V protocol. This is by far the toughest thing I ever had because there is no documentation on this protocol on the web. I've been sitting at this pharmaceutical company, sort of tweaking their control systems, sitting there with Wireshark recording things. That's a challenge. The Siemens S7 COM Plus is the newer protocol Siemens devices use. We have to sort of crack one last little bit. We have to sort of crack the keys they use for encrypting, because they have three little keys they have in their little drivers that you can sort of just disassemble and read. But the thing is, if you do that, you're sort of, you'll get a letter from a lawyer. But if there are other ways to get access to these keys, then they are fine. And so we're currently thinking of ways to sort of do that alternative route. I think even if Edward knew that and he told us, it would still be bad.
It would still be a lawyer's letter.
Yeah. So the general architecture of a PLC for X application currently would be that you have your application and you can either use the native, directly the API of PLC for X, or your application uses Kafka Connect to access the devices. As I mentioned, Apache Camel and Apache Agent were the first integration modules available. So I'd call them, those two, the most mature ones. We're still refining the edges of the Kafka Connect version. On the bottom, we have the driver implementations. And the cool thing is PLC4X is built that you can also add your own protocols. So for example, the German Deutsche Bahn, they were thinking of using PLC4X in their ICE bullet trains. But they needed someone to integrate one of their very custom protocols. So PLC4X would allow that. So you just write the driver module for that protocol, and you can use the same API. Okay. Can you read that? I took out all the spaces and all the comments to sort of get it. up here we have this typical pattern of the closable object, so you don't have to do all this crap you used to do with JDBC in the early ages. So first of all, you use the PLC driver manager to get a connection. And what happens here is that the driver manager just cares about everything before this the double slashes. And what he does, it uses the Java service lookup to find implementations that support the S7 protocol. If it finds one, it instantiates the driver and passes in the rest of the URL. So that's an IP-based URL at the moment, but for Bekov, for example, we also support serial communication. So after that, it's probably from a Unix device, just the name of the serial interface. So you've now got a PLC connection, and as I mentioned, we allow checking if something is supported. Well, reading will probably be supported every time, but it's just here for the sake of completeness. So we ask for a reader and check if it's present. If it's present, we get an instance of it. And what happens now is that we sort of create a request. This is just a request that requests one item with the address inputs/0. Ah, I should have added a double dash byte at the end. So you get a PLC read request. We did that because it's quite, it can sometimes be very, a lot of processing to get this address, because it has to be parsed. Sometimes you have to register with the PLC and tell it that you're going to be reading this. So you prepare a request, and then you just call read. And having this pre-parsed, you can sort of fire it several times, get a completable future. And, well, in this case, just, as soon as it's complete, you get either a response or you get the exception when something went wrong. I think I threw away the if something went wrong part in this example, just that it fits better. So each response can have multiple field names. So at the moment, this will just contain some field, but you can have thousands of fields in that. The drivers take care of everything in the behind the scenes. So I'm just checking here if the reading of this field was successful. If it was successful, damn it, I have to go over here. Yeah, so if the reading was successful, if it was, well, it outputs the value. If it wasn't, it outputs some error. The API is actually quite simple. We try to keep it as flexible as possible, but as simple as possible, and to sort of prevent typical coding errors. We're still sort of refining the API. That's just the version we did a few weeks ago, but for the version 0.2, we're going to redefine it a little bit. Still good in time. A little demo I have at the moment is a sort of, I've got a virtual factory, because it's hard to travel with a factory in your suitcase. So I have a simulation of a factory that communicates with the PLC, and it sets the inputs of the PLC based on the simulation. On the PLC is a normal PLC program running, and it turns on the motors of the factory, which again flows back into the simulation. So the simulation is tightly linked to the PLC's program. Oh, oops. Okay, now everybody's deaf. Then I have a PLC for X application built with Apache Agent that simply pulls data from the PLC and writes that into an Elasticsearch node. Got a little Kibana dashboard on it to sort of visualize it. So now let's hope that it works. Okay, now you should hear the clicking of the device. So you can see the lights changing. So that's now, just think of that as a normal factory that's just doing its thing. Yeah, and you can even throw boxes around. That's the most cool part of that. Now that's cool stuff, huh? So, I'll just start my little application. And then Kibana will stop complaining. Huh. Yeah, the older version of that, sort of, they always, whenever I wasn't looking, they were sort of clogging up, but they fixed that. Oh, yeah.
Here we got one.
Oh, damn it. That's the way how I debug code, by the way. Sort of, if the test breaks, just delete it. Okay, now I have to find the window.
How do you know which side you've been going?
That's not that good. What the simulation does, you can see those, what do you call them? No, it's sort of detector, it's sort of it's a laser beam. As soon as more is, it just, big boxes go there. And little ones, that wasn't tripped here, so it goes up there. So it just sorts big and not big boxes. But for some reason, my Kibana isn't starting. Huh. Okay. Maybe it was just too fast. So now I have this little teeny-weeny dashboard, and sort of presents the state of my system, sort of the current distribution between small and large boxes, and well, some metrics. But the interesting thing is, if I show that to someone from the production industry, they say, oh, wow, cool. Because first of all, it looks a lot nicer than what they're used to. And for this little setup, they would probably have to pay about a mid-sized car. So they would just have to invest that much money for just this little bit of demo. I guess none of you were really impressed by the complexity of this setup. With that, you can sort of really impress people in the industry, especially if you say, it's not got a single euro or dollar on license fee with it. I'd say if any one of you is interested in a deep dive into the code, it's not that much code, but just come after the talk and I'll gladly show it to you. Now I have to find my presentation again.
I have a quick question. Have you measured the overhead related to the Java layer compared to just going into all the way?
I was really surprised that there I think even the implementation I have was even faster than some of the C implementations. I was really surprised, especially as I said, the drivers were sometimes really badly implemented. For example, there's an open source library called MockaJ. And if you have a look at the code, they have all the messages as static array blocks. And if you write something sort of at the beginning of the method, they just overwrite parts of the array and then pass the array to an output stream. That works fine on a single core machine. But as soon as you've got, well, let's say 16 cores and they're all nicely communicating, well, you're guaranteed to overwrite these bytes every now and then, and you'll have a real mess going out over the wire. Yeah.
Similar question. And please feel free to defer to later if you're going to cover this. In a lot of industries, like let's say, you know, chemical plants, for example, you kind of have to guarantee that you can do real-time ingestion. I mean real-time as in the actual real-time. How does PLC4X deal with this kind of thing? You have, like,
No, we don't. We're not planning on sort of playing in this real time arena, because that the protocols involved here, usually you need to use very special hardware where you need very special drivers for. But most of the SCADA systems, for example, if you have a look at Siemens, for example, they're using exactly the same protocol we're using here. And so they're not even using their real-time protocols for the most of their SCADA systems. Now you were talking about the speed, yeah? So that Mocha 7 driver is implemented in the most simple way. So I had reaction times of 5 milliseconds to read something. And with PLC4X, I was down to 3. I don't know how it works, because I'm doing a lot of crazy shit in the background, not just sort of sending out arrays, but the I/O, the asynchronous non-blocking I/O features of Java, they're really fast. And if the C drivers don't use that, so it's strange. But the Java implementation I have here might be faster than the native C implementation others are using. Yeah. Yeah, well, I wouldn't go that far. In our world, yes, if you talk to somebody from the production industry, everything above nanoseconds is really bad. A motor can drive turn several times in those 3 milliseconds. I promised to talk about proof of concepts I've been doing the past year. And the first one that decided to use PLC4X was a manufacturer of machines to sort of unwind and cut material that is shipped on coil. So they have these huge machines that are bigger than this room, and they have huge forklifts that bring in coils of some foil, plastic, paper, whatever. And they are able to sort of unwind and cut this precisely at insane speeds. And that manufacturer wanted to start collecting data on these machines and ship that data to his private cloud system. So they decided to go with Siemens MindSphere, but still the integration with MindSphere is done with PLC4X. And what they wanted to do is, for example, as an offer for customers, to do machine learning. So they had the problem that, let's say, a machine that works well unwinding, some paper in Germany works fine. But let's say in Singapore or some area where the humidity is very high, they had several breakages of the material and stuff like that. So they started analyzing humidity, temperature, and stuff like that, and learned which parameters are best for certain climate conditions. So as soon as somebody, well, let's say somebody buys a machine, is in a similar area, has similar climate, probably he shouldn't run his machine at 100% if the humidity is at 90%. So that on the that was on the one side something they wanted to learn, and on the other hand they wanted to do predictive maintenance. They wanted to know that a machine was going to have a problem before the customer knows that it's going to have a problem, and wanted to put a person in a plane with some spare parts to knock at the door of the customer before the customer even knew that there was going to be a problem with his machine. And, well, they've been very happy. They haven't ever contacted me again because it seems to be working nicely. The second one I'm currently working on is a very large German pharma company. They want to optimize their production. And for that, they want internal KPIs of the production plant to be available to analysts that are outside of their high security safety network. And that was one of the most important things. If you're, for example, a pharmaceutical company and you produce stuff you want to ship to the US, the FDA has some very restrictive policies on what's allowed and what's not, and sort of having influence on the production network from the outside is an absolute no-go. So we've set up, we're using a replication port to just output all the traffic from the internal network outside, but we're not connecting the back path, so it's just reading. And we're implementing a special form of driver I'm going to talk about in a minute or so that is just able to read all the traffic that's going on in the secure network, interprets that, and makes it available outside. And they're sort of, yeah, they're expecting to sort of save about 150,000 euros per year per machine. And, well, they have, I think, a 3- or 4-digit number of machines. So, yeah, well, they're quite happy if that works. Currently, they have something where they have to sort of adjust about 5 different systems. So they have their internal operator system, they call it, that gathers data from the PLCs. They write that into a special customized database. Then they have an SAP system that reads from that and writes it into another database. And whenever they want a new data point, they have to adjust 5 systems. It takes several weeks. It costs several thousand euros in process costs. And in the end, the time in which new data arrives outside of the system, it takes quite some time because it has to be copied through several iterations. The third POC that was just booked a week or so ago is a very large German car manufacturer. They have a huge line of robots that sort of are building the cars, and they want to gather data from these robots. And they have the problem that they simply can't find systems big enough to be able to gather all the information from all these robots. And it was sort of a week after we had the first commit to the Kafka Connect adapter. The fun thing is, we're just cutting off this huge server they had to run for several years and several other systems. And now we're just connecting their Kafka cluster directly with the PLCs. So they can now sort of build Kafka streams that just read actively from PLCs. And that's going to be real fun. Yeah?
Previously, in the code, when you showed the feature update, and even though your communication is asynchronous, but in a way you are kind of blocking on the read, is that true, like in using Kafka or Apache Camel, when you're actually reading the data, do you actually block on the read, or do you actually implement a true asynchronous read?
I think they're implemented asynchronous, yeah.
Is it asynchronous from the client side? Or
I think it really depends on the type of connection. Because, for example, at the moment, the driver doesn't support subscribing from Siemens devices. So it will use the polling, and that will probably not be fully asynchronous, but as soon as we implemented the publish subscribe for Siemens, then it will.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, I have to speed up. Or how many minutes have I got? 15?
Yes.
Ah, great. So, talking a little bit about a community, because that's been sort of an interesting thing, because I've never, ever started an Apache project before. I don't know if anybody was here in Miami, ApacheCon Miami. There I sort of had this idea, and I think I had a talk on building SCADA systems with open source software. And that was sort of a test balloon. Haven't even started with a project yet. And a few months after that, my boss, I got the permission to start working on this open source project. So it was almost a year ago since the first commit to our repository. We're now sort of been 10 months in the incubator. For the past half year, I've been sort of investing most of my time in spreading the word. Sort of, I wrote several articles in IT magazines in Germany, written several blog posts to sort of spread the word. In the beginning of the year, I had the idea, well, this is a very special topic. I better submit to every call for paper that sort of comes my way. Well, it turns out that was a bad idea because it was a lot of work because I've been speaking at about 10 conferences this year with this topic. And I've been going a lot to industrial fairs. So I go to these fairs and then I've got my my little stickers and my Apache business cards, and then I'm just going from stand to stand, talking to people, sort of giving a quick PLC4X introductions about 80 times per day. But in the end, it's been working out. In the last 3 months, till the last 3 months, it was sort of me having a monologue on the mailing list, so it sort of felt a little sad whenever I had a look in my the folder for the PLC4X dev list. It was sort of me just talking to myself. I was also, hey, I'm going to do this now, and hey, what do you guys think about doing this? And sort of me responding to myself, it was, oh, damn it. But for the last 3 months, things have been exploding. More and more people have been showing up, have been communicating. The number of contributors exploded about by 800% in the last 3 months. We even had our first meetup the day before I got on the plane here. And we're currently voting on our first release. I think the vote even... It has passed, but I just haven't had the time to sort of write the email that now the incubator PMC has to vote on it. And we're currently also working on increasing the number of people on the PPMC. As a small example, I have numbers from, as I mentioned, it was sort of, well, this was mainly me talking to myself. You can see I had a lot of topics I was talking about in contrast to what I was talking about. But this 3 months ago, it sort of wham, went through the roof. I was oh, seems to be gaining more and more traction. So, what's coming? My main goal is still growing the community and educating the community, because most of the people that sort of joined in the past, they have absolutely no history with Apache. So I've been doing a lot of mentoring of my own Podling members, but they're more and more getting it, and it's working nicer and nicer. I'm going to be implementing the OPC UA protocol pretty soon. We're going to be implementing some promiscuous mode drivers, I like to call them. I've got the next slide about that, so I'll just postpone that to the next slide. Let's say the Siemens and the Beckhoff drivers I'd call are the most mature drivers. The other drivers, well, I would like to give them the stamp experimental. So please give us 1 or 2 months before using that in production, or keep on opening Jira issues if you encounter any problems. After soothing the edges of the drivers, we're going to start adding these simulated features. Two people showing me numbers. Cool. And yeah, well, building the community. I mentioned that several times because this is one of the biggest things. A lot of people are scared when we come and when I sort of talk about the possibilities with PLC4X, and they're sort of afraid of the additional load these systems would produce on the PLCs, because every request that goes to PLC, it sort of produces a little bit of load on the system. And if you really ask one of these devices a lot of questions, it's sort of just consumed with answering these questions. So people are afraid that using PLC4X to access their systems, they would break things. So I started thinking of ways to read data from PLCs without having any effect on the device itself. And my solution for that is the Promiscuous Mode drivers. So what we're doing is there's usually always a control system that keeps on asking the PLC, what's the value X, what's the value of Z, and so on. And so we're reading all the requests and the responses, matching them, making them available to the outside. So we're sort of just sort of a, yeah, well, it's sort of like being a spy on the network, sort of just listening to everything that's going on and answering questions anybody was going to ask us. And that's one thing that sort of is going to be tricky, because it's a Java application and we have to do some real low-level network stuff. So we have to sort of switch the network device to Promiscuous Mode. We have to really capture the raw Ethernet sockets, and processing them isn't always fun. Yeah, so this is one thing that sort of really got the industry interested. So, thanks for listening. Are there any questions? Yeah?
What's the most advanced per second you've thrown at this?
Oh, I can't even say, because we really don't have, I've just got this S7200. Well, the numbers you can produce with that isn't that. I've never ever done a benchmark, because it really depends on how big the requests are.
True. But I mean, we do industrial as well. And, a million events a second is quite common.
Mm-hmm.
And I, from your own numbers, you mentioned something like 3 millisecond overhead just for driver access, which gives you about 300 events per second. And that's not even trying to write it somewhere. That's
yeah.
I'm kind of curious how realistic it is to use this at high scale versus do you envision other strategies like edge ingestion or aggregation at the edge?
Yeah, that's definitely one thing. That's why I'm so also involved in the Apache Edgent project, because for me, Apache Edgent and PLC4X, that's sort of the perfect match to sort of just gather information quickly at the edge, aggregate that, and send it up. Because currently, the typical industry 4.0 solution is to read everything from a PLC, write everything into the cloud, and hope that someday someone will come up with something sensible to do with that data.
Well, it's not just that. It's that when you get into machine learning, for example, you don't necessarily know. You have to integrate a lot of attributes, and then they may or may not be relevant to whatever question you have, but you need them ingested. You need a kind of critical mass of history of these events to create all of these algorithms in the first place. So that's kind of why these customers will always look at throwing as much as they can, and even capturing everything.
Yeah, that's what they're trying to do. But I would say I'd like to postpone the answer to that question after doing that proof of concept with that car manufacturer. I'll definitely be blogging about that. So, yeah. Any other questions, suggestions? Yeah?
That's a little bit of a stupid question, but Stuxnet.
Yeah?
Uses Siemens.
Hmm? Yeah, well, all I can say is when you start implementing the low-level drivers for these types of systems, the thing that worries me most about these devices, for example, is to actually connect them to the internet directly. Because maybe a small anecdote, these devices I can, in the IDE, I can set a password for that. So I enter a password, and then this machine is protected against manipulation if I don't know the password. Well, you could implement it that way that the PLC checks the password, but the way Siemens obviously did it is sort of to sort of, as soon as you connect to that device, it requests the password hash, asks you for the password, compares that to that hash, and if that matches, then it starts the upload. But there's nothing preventing me from replacing the software on that device, even if I don't know the password. So talking about security, security on these devices, I'd say security on these devices is almost not existent. Yeah. That's why I'm sort of worried with all these cloud solutions from the industrial companies that sort of ask us to connect these things to the internet, because you have to get to the cloud somewhere. So I'd much more prefer to have some edge device with separate networks in between and to do some pre-processing on-site before it goes out, because I think we all know that no internet connection is 100% safe. And the stuff you can do on these machines, it's sort of, yeah. Ask the people, the Irani centrifuge people about that.